I want to share a little something about the parable of the fig tree. And I'm sorry to be kind of kaleidoscoping you here, but all of these things are directed toward one end, and that is a revelation of the transaction at the cross. Everything is there. The end of the old creation is there. Jesus was the last Adam, wasn't he? What does that mean? There aren't any more after that. Is that fair? I mean, does it say, Paul, is that okay? Well, he's the last Adam. He went to the cross. Last Adam died. That's the end of that. He became a life-giving spirit. So, but we need to understand that transaction, because it's the result of that transaction that puts us to death in Adam, the old one, and positions us to become alive in the life-giving spirit of Christ. We talked about healing this morning, prayed about healing. And I was struggling with the parable of the fig tree in Matthew 24. You know that parable? So Jesus kind of sums up what he has to say there. So then, when you see the fig tree putting forth its tender shoots, know that summer's near. Even all these things are about to come to pass. And at the time, the most popular understanding of the parable was that the fig tree represented geographical Israel, and the grass was blooming and all kinds of stuff was going on. I wasn't quite satisfied with that. Got nothing against Israel. The whole idea that this could be a Christian nation, for instance, to me is anti-Semitic. Because if it could work at that level, the Jews would have made it work. Somebody said the Jews are God's magnifying glass on humanity. They're the best of the best and the worst of the worst. They'll really give you a good picture. And a lot of it got written down to make sure we saw the whole deal. It's in the book. And I commend it not so much as regulation, although as regulation it's good because it'll put you to death. The letter kills, but the spirit gives life. But as examples, if you want to see how God does life, there's just no better place to look than at the Old Testament people of God. I was wrestling with the Lord about that. I was commuting. I went an hour and a half one way to Stanford from the shoreline in those days. And I said, Lord, this time it was a melody going through my mind at the subconscious level. And when I became consciously aware of it, there's a bomb in Gilead. I knew that the answer was there to the fig tree. Had no idea what it was. I was just on my way to work. But I settled myself down, said, got the answer. Went to work, got home, got to my Strong's. I love Strong's. I consider Strong's exhaustive concordance with Greek and Hebrew dictionaries my number one defense against scholars. If you don't have one, you ought to get one, because it gives you a good idea what the original language says and related words, so you get a pretty good picture of stuff there without becoming a Greek and Hebrew scholar. So I got back to my Strong's, and I quickly went and I looked up balm, B-A-L-M. And you know the passage is from Jeremiah. I think it's mentioned a couple of times. Is there no balm in Gilead, no physician there? The root word in the Strong's was Kraken caused to leak. I'm going, what is that? And as I thought about it, I thought, oh, that's the way a poultice works. I looked up poultice. Two of them in the Bible, two references, one in Isaiah, one in 2 Kings, I think it is. When Hezekiah, last king of Israel, had a boil, and the Lord came to Isaiah and said to him, prepare a poultice of figs and put it on the boil, and he'll get well. He said, oh my goodness, a biblical poultice is a fig. And I was curious to know whether figs are divided like other fruit. You know, as I ran to the supermarket and cut one in half in the middle, there's no divisions in a fig. It's just seeds and goo. I thought, boy, this is a great picture of the church. But the important thing was that I realized that Jesus is the fig. And when he hung on that cross, he hung there as a poultice. And all the sins of the world in time and space were drawn into him who knew no sin, that we might be the righteousness of God in him. He took it all away there. All of it. He took it away at the cross. I went back I kept pestering the Lord about, how come the stripes, Lord? Why the stripes were healed? How about the thorns and the nails? And why did you single out stripes? And then I realized that when Jesus was scourged by Pilate, I think in an effort to placate the Jews in order not to cross his wife, he was preparing Jesus without knowing it to be a poultice. To prepare a fig to be a poultice, you've got to peel it. Because it's the inner vital part in contact with the infection that draws it out. We are an extension of that healing ministry. Paul said, I make up in my body the afflictions lacking in Christ for the sake of his body, the church. So we got part of that deal. And you can't work that. You just can't do it without a love that's good for enemies. You can't do it without a love that is so powerful, you'd rather you had that disease in you than that person has it. That's the way lovers are. That's the way Jesus was. He had compassion and he contacted people. And it said this was written in order to fulfill that which was written. He took our stuff on himself, even before he went to the cross. That was what was in his heart. He saw a person and loved them so much that he would rather have had their illness, their blindness, their deafness, their lameness in himself than to leave them like that. That's a long way from what the world's seen calling itself church for quite a while.